Pozo. Crema.
Garland to the line, to the lane, underneath to Allen, bubbled and got it back. Left corner, Windler, three ball. Good from Dylan Windler.
I love it.
Broadcasting live.
Ish.
From Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse on the sunny shores of beautiful Lake Erie.
Viene corriendo, ya verá. ¡Ale! Volando patrulla juvenil de costa a costa, la clava dos. Poniendo a todo el mundo de pie aquí en el Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse.
In downtown Cleveland.
Hello, Cleveland! Hello, Cleveland!
You've tuned in to Wine and Gold Radio.
A coral baseline!
Oh, thunderous, jaw-dropping dunk by a coral ties this game at 99.
Made no doubt. There was no doubt where that was going straight to the hoop and throwing a hammer down.
Now, here are your hosts, Rafa, J-Bike, and Joe G.
Sounds like a damn monster movie.
Yeah, hey, everybody.
Hey.
Welcome to episode 9 of Wine and Gold Radio.
Wine and Gold Radio. Before you go on, John, yes. Do you know what movie that is from? Yeah, hey.
No, I do not.
That is from Midnight Run, John. Have you ever seen that one?
Yeah, I like that movie, actually. I just don't remember that part.
Well, we know how to say hello in many languages except yours.
That one's even a good J-Mike movie. Even J-Mike like that one.
Yeah, I like that movie. I do like that movie.
Man, do you know, hang on, before I even do that, I am joined by Rafa Hernandez Brito.
Me.
And Juan Miguel, John Michael, voice of the cat.
Yeah, you know what? Yes, and you know why I like that movie, continuing on after my introduction? Because at the end, everybody's happy. You go home happy. You're not mixed up. There's no confusion as to what happened. The movie's over. I still don't know what happened. Everybody's happy at the end. And that's there's a good movie. Just saying.
Guys, do you know if the season ended today? Not quite. Not quite in the postseason. However, nice 4-1. Record to end the break, and we'd be, imagine how happy we'd be if TJ McConnell took last Wednesday off.
What a first half that he had in the field house. But I think it's a good way to stop for the Cavs, midway point of the season of what, 72 games scheduled, John, and the bounce back from that 10 game losing streak have to have everybody pleased, including JB Bickerstaff and his staff.
Yeah, it was nice. It was necessary. I mean, no question about it. And you're right, Joseph. I mean, the Cavs seemingly had that game, that Indiana game, in control in the second half, only to see it slip away. You know, it's almost as if it reminds this team going into break that, yes, things were cruising along, but, yeah, there are some things to clean up, you know, and turnovers were one of them in that ball game. But I think, again, the way it ended, the bounce back, the response to that extended slide is what you want to see. They got back to playing the kind of basketball that JB was talking about at the beginning of the season. Ball movement on the offensive end. That ball movement leads to more threes. We know that was a problem during the slide, not taking enough, not being able to make enough. And then defensively getting back to, you know, at least closer to where they were at the beginning of the season, despite the fact that they've lost a number of key players in that first half. So I think it did mean good things for this team. That last 4 out of 5, those 5 games heading in, going 4-1. And I think it's a good time for a break. I mean, think about it. This first half has been littered with injuries. Guys are on the mend. Hopefully guys are getting closer. And hopefully this rotation and roster look a little bit different when this team takes the floor again next Friday.
Yeah, and some pleasant surprises from that little 5-game run at the end of the season. Dean Wade and Lamar Stevens, boy, they sure came out of the blue and really just made a nice impression right before the break.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about Dean Wade, to me, it allows JB Bickerstaff, because Dean is able to do the job, to fit the pieces back where they belong. I mean, we saw what it looked like during that losing stretch when you're trying to use a natural three at that 4 spot. You know, some guys can do it, some guys can't, and maybe not through any fault of their own, just because they don't have the size to be able to do so. But Dean Wade, because of the way he handled himself because of the way he remained ready, stepped into that role in his first start, and everybody said, yeah, this guy can do the job, and there he remained, you know, for his first five NBA starts. And again, you want to talk about a guy not doing too much? His shots when he needed to, particularly those threes. A good team defender on that defensive end, had a double-digit rebounding game in the win over Philadelphia. So I think that was really a pleasant surprise. And Stevens has been great since the start of the season. I mean, again, particularly on that defensive end, he has that junkyard dog mentality, exactly what the doctor ordered for this team. So I think you're right. Those were pleasant surprises. And I love what Stevens has done all season long. I mean, you're going to talk about a guy who was just trying to hang on to an NBA team, undrafted out of Penn State in December, and then he's a huge rotation piece for, you know, this team heading into the All-Star break. So hats off to both of those guys, and thank goodness they've both been around, or who knows how these last five games would have gone.
And you love to see guys taking advantage of their opportunity. You mentioned Lamar Stevens, you know, when he even said it, that he didn't even know. He was actually shocked when they called his name to come into the game and really, like, took control right. of the situation. And we've seen what he has done. But also Dean Wade is a sign of a thing that you love to see. J.B. Bickerstaff kind of sees his hand forced to make an adjustment at the starting lineup against Atlanta because of the length. And here we are, five straight games with Dean Wade in the starting lineup, and it's turned out beautifully for them.
And then two other real nice things going into the break. I think Colin had 10 straight games of 20-plus points, so he had an excellent run going into the break. And then maybe the revelation of the first half, Jared Allen, that squad, who came in the trade and was playing real good ball, and then he did Wine and Gold Radio, and everything turned around for that kid. Yeah, nine straight double-doubles going into the break, and he's just been playing out of his mind. The kid's been just awesome.
Yeah, super, super. I mean, you want to talk about first-half player of the year? He's certainly in consideration. I mean, again, what a nice pickup, you know, in terms of the front office getting into that James Harden deal and pulling out of it Jared Allen, you know, potentially your center of the future along with Torian Prince. By the way, how about this? That double-double streak you alluded to, Joe? They took a rebound away from him in Philadelphia. So that broke the streak. That broke his double-double streak. He had 10 in Philly. They took one away later. You know, that kind of stuff happens at home, right? When your home guy is going to give him an extra one. Yeah, he finished with 9. Later, they took away a rebound. So that streak, they have messed up the Washington Gold Radio. Jared Allen, double-double streak. Just letting you know.
That yeah. doesn't surprise me that much because they are rude in Philadelphia. I mean, they booed Santa and they cheered when Michael Irvin got hurt, and they cursed at our buddy John Michael. They called him.
They did.
And no, they used the curse word.
Right. They weren't cursing at me. They thought they were cursing at Scalabrini. So I guess they were cursing at me. But you are correct. And it wasn't just a curse. It was a very forceful, direct curse. Telling me / Scalabrini what to do with myself.
Who do you got today for the show, Wolfie?
Today's show, our special guest is going to be BJ Evans, who's actually, and I have to look up his title because it's really important, Director of Basketball Operations. Ooh. That's a fancy title that doesn't even do justice to all the things BJ does.
What is it, Director of Basketball Operations?
Director of Basketball Operations. So we're going to be back with BJ right after the break with episode 9 of Wine and Gold Radio.
Wine and Gold Radio.
Hey, this is Andrew Harding, the co-founder of Knocking Point Wines, the official wine partner of the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm a big fan of wine, big fan of sports, big fan of the Cavs, but I would never listen to Wine and Gold Radio. That's it. Never. Cheers.
There's more of this.
Get that taste. Mm. Ooh, let me get that taste.
After this, on Wine and Gold Radio.
The Cav City Collection is now available online at cav.com/shop. Rep the land with jerseys, hats, tees, and more, inspired by the Cav City Edition uniforms.
Love running the lane, left side dance. Pow! With two hands.
The Cavaliers, in a partnership with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, introduced the team's City Edition uniform, featuring a design and style that reflects the grit, attitude, and spirit of Cleveland's rock and roll roots. See the whole collection at cav.com/shop.
Last one, Ralph. Go ahead.
Rafa Hernandez Brito, Cap Spanish Radio. Jared, you know, I don't want to take any credit for Wine and Gold Radio, but ever since you came on and we gave you your Spanish nickname, Patrulla Juvenil, you've been on a double-double streak. Does this mean that you're going to start to listen to the show or you're still not going to listen?
I'm still not going to listen. Hey, I'm just saying, it's a coincidence. I went on there and all of a sudden I'm playing well.
Keep on the mud squad mode, man. Come on.
This is Jared Allen, center for the Cavs. I listen to a lot of things every day, but it's never Wine and Gold Radio.
Now, back to Wine and Gold Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Wine and Gold Radio. We have
Wine and Gold Radio
special. We have such a great special guest for segment two. I'm really excited about this, and it's kind of the all-star episode, and this guy normally would be, like, up to his neck in all-star duties. Next year, he will be. Director of Basketball Operations, BJ Evans. BJ, welcome to the show.
Excuse me.
What's up, guys? How we doing?
HBCU graduate. Now that we're talking all-star week, you got to include that HBCU graduate, North Carolina A&T, baby.
That's right. You know, it's almost bittersweet because the All-Star game this year is formulated around HBCUs, and I'm not even there. It's bittersweet.
If I had that varsity jacket, I'd never not wear it. I'd wear it every day, every game.
I wear it quite often. Let's put it that way. And it's super warm, but also I love repping my school, as you guys know. My license plate is North Carolina A&T. I wear North Carolina A&T hats. I have North Carolina A&T sweatshirts. So there's not a moment that you won't see me with something repping my alma mater.
So, I mean, you must be absolutely gassed from the first half. Just before we get into anything, how are you feeling? Are you feeling a little decompressed right now? A little.
To be honest with you, and you guys know this by being on the road, it's already a grind anyway, you know, city to city, flight to flight, bus ride, airport, unloading the truck, getting your bags, you know, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., you know, it's already a grind. So you take that and you compact it into, you know, a 4 or 5 day period where you're getting in at 3 a.m, but then you're waking up first thing to test and your sleep level is not as high as it used to be because you're worried about missing your test window. So even when you're asleep, you're thinking about, I can't oversleep, I can't oversleep, I can't oversleep, because you have to test in a certain amount of time because they have to take all the tests, take them to the lab and get it processed so you can get the information back so you can either have your practice or have your game. And so it's
unbelievable what you're going through this year. You're the lone wolf out there with the team right now. I have to tell a quick story about how we met, BJ, because you're the director of basketball operations. You're the conduit from the players to the public to the media. I hadn't met you yet, and you took over at this job. And our first summer league was when Mike Brown returned. I love Mike Brown, but his practices were brutal and boring. We let high school kids in one time in Sacramento, and they left halfway through. High school kids. Anyway, so our first time was summer league, and I remember Mike Brown had his practices at Desert Oasis High School, and they were like the bottomless pasta at the Olive Garden in that he would bring everybody in and say, okay, guys, great practice, and there'd be the clapping, everybody be ready, we'd be ready to get out into the Vegas Strip, and then he'd break it up and send everybody back out, and I just remember those were the most brutal evenings in Las Vegas you could imagine.
Joe, to sit here and say that I can usually predict when practice is going to end, I had no clue when a Mike Brown practice was going to end. I mean, it felt like you and I were playing musical chairs the entire time because, you know, we sit there and say, who you want to interview today? Oh, yeah, great, that's great, that's great. He'd bring them in. Joe and I would stand up and start walking around the table to approach the court, and then he'd be like, all right, guys, let's do X, Y, and Z. Let's do X, Y, and Z. And this happened, I'd say, the first day it happened at least 7-8 times where we stood up and we were ready to go, and then we had to sit right back down. And I'm like, okay, is this normal, Joe? I'd never really been around Mike Brown before. I mean, it's my first time meeting him too. His first practice, I'm like, what is going on here? Like, I couldn't imagine what the players were thinking. Because, you know, you bring it in and you clap and you say team, that's it.
Right. It's a wrap. When they say team, that means it's it.
We got to
up and exactly. reconvene to do drills. And I mean, so real quick, the next year. So the next year we go into – and it's David Blatt is the coach. And real quick, I just remember – I knew something wasn't going to work because he was coaching in jeans. As you know, that's an NBA no-no. That is an absolute no-no.
Man, listen, you remember before he would get on the court, like he would sometimes come in with sweats on or shorts on, and then he would sit on the sideline and change in a chair in his – and take off said shorts or said sweatpants and put his jeans on. And I'm like, okay, this is not normal. And so I'm thinking, okay, hey, maybe he has a jean sponsor and that was a part of his coaching thing. Like, you know, you're trying to give a guy the benefit of the doubt because he's new, you know, he's in the team. Like, okay, I'm getting the benefit of the doubt. Maybe this is his thing. So, but turns out he had a lot of things.
You know, you have to be with the players before, during, and after. There's a lot of things that you do that go unnoticed before, you know, when somebody talks to Angel or John and AC after the game, you're the one in charge, especially those years that we were in the playoffs. There's like three or four media groups that have to get. But also you have to be in the locker room after the game, which where some of the media members have access to, and during the players, during the playoff, is international media. We all want to hear, and I think I want to go radio listeners want to hear the now infamous, famous banana story. And I know it has to do with the fact that there's food available for the players after the game, right, in the locker room.
Right.
With the operative right. word being players, food is available for the players just to set up.
So tell us, share that story with us.
All right. So let me paint the picture for you. So, you know, out at Oracle at the old building, you know, the locker room was like the baseball locker room because the Oracle was connected to where the A's play. So the locker room was this huge, huge locker room. And there's a table and it had like fruit and, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, like everything that the players use to refuel, to knock the hunger off, to get them in between, you know, sessions of working out, what have you. And so during that 4-year stretch and obviously playing the Warriors all those years, the amount of media in the locker room was just enormous. So even though we had this huge space, there was still not enough space for all of the media. And so these guys know it. So Rafa, J. Mike, and Joe G, they know what this looks like. But we had this one international reporter who thought that that food table was a free-for-all buffet table. Okay? So mind you, in addition to just the food and the stuff that I have to worry about, I'm also looking at people with cameras out, you know, that want to take still photography, which is a no-no in the locker room. But this was different and something that I didn't expect to ever see happen. But we had a media member go over to the food table and pick up a banana. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe he's going to put it in his pocket and walk out, which, you know, we can laugh that off. No, that's not what he did. He started peeling the banana and he starts to eat the banana. And I'm like, okay, I'm seeing what I'm seeing. Now I got to do something. You know, I got to do something. And so I go over and I'm like, hey, you know, this is for the players. This is not for the media. You can't do that. You know, you got to get rid of this. You know, throw it away. He didn't throw it away. He shoved it all in his mouth. He wanted that banana that bad that he shoved it in his mouth, you know, as to say, I didn't have the banana. You know, the initial reaction is, I want to strangle this guy and toss him out of the
mouth. Did he stay there? Did he stay or did he shove it in his mouth and take off?
He shoved it, but he had to go because I went into you're kicked out of the locker room mode because, you know, I alluded to earlier about photographers. So you can't take still photography in the locker room. And so from game number one of the regular season to the last game of the NBA finals, I'd say I'd average 2 to 3 media people kickouts of the locker room because you could see people wedging themselves over so they could take a steel shot of LeBron or Kyrie or Kevin, Tristan, especially, you know, JR, and they try to sneak the picture off with their phone and then put it in their pocket. So I had gotten to the point where I would get behind the scrums and just kind of walk from side to side looking and see. And after a while, you could see who was going to come in there and take the picture. They weren't there to get any interviews. They weren't there to get any insight. They wanted to get a picture. And every game, I'd average 2 a game kickouts. And most of the time, and unfortunately, it was international media because the rules over there sometimes are a lot different than they are in the NBA and in American sports. So they feel like it's a free-for-all. Well, not in our place. And a lot of times, it was better for me to approach a photographer than our huge security force that we had. That, yeah, I mean, we had 5 guys who were ready for action at any time. You know, so it was better that they had to deal with me as opposed to them. But it became a game on who could kick out the first photographer first. So between myself and Robert Brown and Jason Daniel and those guys, I'd say, hey, I got 1 already. I got 2 already.
I remember you had a season high 4 in Brooklyn one night. You were throwing everybody out of the locker room in Brooklyn.
Well, I did.
being a bilingual person and having worked a lot with international media, I can assure you that a lot of them pulled the no hablo card when they're getting kicked out. Like I did.
hey, Rafa, it's so funny. You're absolutely right. So English would be the preferred language coming in, and a lot of times those guys were really nice. I mean, I'm talking about really nice, really respectful, like, hello, you know, when is X player going to talk? And I'd be like, he's going to talk after he showers. You can wait right over here. But that same nice person take out their camera and want to take a picture. And I'd be like, hey, you got to go. And then all of a sudden, here comes the language that I don't speak anymore. And I'm like, you know what? They're going to understand this language. You have to go. And I point and escort them all the way out to the door. And I would tell the security person at the outside the door, I was like, this person can't come back in.
So on the kickout leaderboard, still photography is number 1. Whole banana, yeah. I'm sure is 1. It's way down the list. What else is on that leaderboard? How else might somebody get himself or herself kicked out of an NBA locker room in your experience?
Oh, well, there's a lot, John. Let's see. Photography.
I know that.
I'd say the banana is 1A because that's I don't think that'll ever happen again. But I'd say the third thing is taking equipment, like putting their hands in a player's locker, you know, to look at a jersey or pull a jersey out or, you know, try to move a shoe or, you know, that'll get you kicked out real quick because when you start catching a player's personal items.
Right.
I mean, I had a guy, you know, the little ball that like players will stretch on, what you call it? The big balls.
Like the yoga balls. Yeah.
The yoga balls. We had a reporter sit on the yoga ball like it was just a regular chair. You know, he's just sitting there like, yada, yada, yada. I was looking for somewhere to sit down. This is a great spot. And I'm like, dude, get up. It's not a lounge. You know, I could go on and on, J-Mike. I mean, sit at a player's locker. You know, take out a player's jersey and take a picture with it. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. You know, I mean, I had photographers walk in the training room. I had a reporter. So you remember the old locker room before we had the renovations at the field house, how tight things were.
Yeah.
But the coach's office was right there at the front door. I had a reporter walk in Ty Lue's office, sit down at the couch, and was having a conversation with him. You know, T. Lue. I mean, you guys know T. Lue laughs stuff off like that. You know, he'll entertain the guy, but he has this look on his face like, who is this? You know, and I go in there to give T. Lue the starters like that I got from the other team, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, you're having a meet? He was like, I don't know this dude. I looked down, he's got a credential on. I was like, you got to get out of here, dude. You got to get out of here. You got to get out of here.
Now,
give me that credential while you're at it. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. You have done media at the college level. You have done media at the professional level. Has it changed a lot since there's no longer only traditional media members covering sports? You know, now, not to take anything away from the bloggers and the other forms of media now, but that has given, I think, an avenue to a lot of people that maybe don't know the protocol, or they do know it, but they don't care about it. I don't know, but has it changed?
No, you're right. Like, technology has changed journalism, like, beyond its scope, because you're right. You don't have the traditional outlets covering the NBA anymore. I mean, you got your blog sites, you got your podcast sites, you know, even radio now has found a way to engage more and grab that sound. So you really didn't have a lot of that, like in the 90s and the early 2000s, because it just wasn't present. You know, but now that it's so present and so many platforms have migrated to the digital age, you have now more new non-traditional journalists covering the team who haven't gone through the gauntlet of specific protocols on how to handle yourself in certain environments. And so it's all different. And the age of journalists have gone way down. Like, gone are the days of the Sam Smiths of the world who's covered the league for 40, 45 years. They're not on the beat anymore.
Yeah.
You got young guys now. And so they're like, they want to get in, they want to get quick, and they feel that they have a sense of entitlement to get this information because they're hungry to get it so fast and so quick. It's different from, you know, developing that long-lasting relationship. So when you do come into the locker room, the player is more welcoming, you know, to your style of covering than it has been in years past. So it's totally different. And it's funny. And I'll tell you this, because, you know, Joe knows this story. I'll tell your listeners. So, you know, when I was in Miami, you know, I had a guy, you know, you may have heard of him, Alonzo Mourning. And, you know, he was a very engaging, you know, person with the media, but sometimes he didn't want to be engaged. He didn't want to be bothered. He really didn't want to talk to anybody, but he knew he had an obligation to do his media, which I always respected. He honored his obligation, but he did it in a different way. And so for about, I'd say about a week and a half, close to 2 weeks, he took a different approach with the media. And to this day, I can't do anything but laugh. And whenever I see him, we laugh about it, but I give you an example. So any one of you can ask me a question and I give you an Alonzo Mourning response. So any one of you can ask me any question about basketball and I'm gonna give you his response.
BJ, how many All-Star games have you done over the course of your career?
Okay, because we're on the radio, you can't see me, but I'm nodding my head and listening to Joe's question about how many All-Star games that I've been to. So Alonzo's response would be, yep, I've been to a lot of All-Star games. and that would be it. He would literally repeat your question and nod his head the entire time. And he would smile. He would make eye contact with you. But for a week and a half, almost two, that was his response to every question. So no matter what you said, he could have went out there and scored 50 points, had 14 rebounds, 10 blocks, being like, Alonzo, you know, you had a great game tonight, you know, 50 points, 14 rebounds. He was like, yep, 50 points, 14 rebounds, 5 blocks. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
you cover many, you have many guys, obviously, in the years with the Cavs, with Miami, with the Bobcats. Have there been guys that you were surprised that they enjoy talking to the media post-game, or there is no such a thing?
It's been 50-50, Rafa. Yeah. Because you got guys who had aspirations to be broadcasters, you know, ending their basketball career. Yeah. So I could name off 10 or 15 guys that I knew that's where their path was heading. And then you had the other end of the spectrum who – They wouldn't do media at all.
Yeah.
And they only did it just because they had to, you know. So I'd say I've been lucky to have guys who are respectful enough to understand that's a part of the job, but they didn't really want to be there, and they really didn't want to do it.
And what are the players required to do by league standards? But just so everybody knows, like in a post game, I know pre game they're not available or their locker room is open, but it's really but post game, what is it that they are obligated, if that's the word, to do?
Yeah, so in a general sense, so after every practice, players have to make themselves available for 30 minutes after every practice. In a normal situation, non-pandemic, pre-game, the locker room would be open and players have the option to speak with media either pre-game or they would have spoke to media at a shoot-around.
Mm-hmm.
And then post-game, the locker room is open and the players have to make themselves available 15 minutes after the game ends for a period of 30, 45 minutes, depending on their treatment, stretching, you know, what have you. And, you know, in my personal experiences, you know, 90% of the time the players were open to waiting around and doing it. Now, obviously, if you're a guy at the end of the bench, you didn't play at all. There was no expectation for you to be in the locker room once media came in. But if you're a starter, you know, in the rotation guy and you had a decent game or the team lost, but, you know, there was a certain play that media wanted to ask you about, there was a certain expectation that you'd have to be there, you know, after the game, you know, and, you know, sometimes you have to manage those situations depending on, you know, where the guy is. Like sometimes it might not be the best time for that player to stand in front of a camera and reporters because he may say something that not really,
yeah,
you know, family friendly, right. You know, not really team friendly, that you say, you know, we'll get you tomorrow. You can go. And, yeah, and as a PR person, you know, I take the hit and be like, hey, you know, I let him leave. If don't be upset with him, be upset with me. You know, I told him he can leave.
So am I wrong to think or assume that out of all the bad things that you explained at the beginning of this conversation about the thing added to being on the road and all that, but the fact that the player finally can have their locker room for themselves, is that something that they might welcome? They're welcoming during this pandemic era? Because I think I felt bad all the time when I walk into a locker room and these guys are getting dressed, getting, you know, NFL or NBA locker rooms. I would imagine they love the fact now that it's just them in the locker room.
Yeah, it's funny you said that, Rafa, because I was talking to my team about this, and the players have been more accommodating and more open to the Zoom calls on practice days and other days because they don't have – and I don't want – intrusion is a tough word to say, the intrusion of media in the locker room. That's really a tough word. But, you know, that's their space.
Like an invasion.
Yeah, that's their space. Like a lot of times I don't stand around in there either, mm-hmm. you know, when they're getting dressed. Like I'll pop in and be like, hey, I'm going to need you for media after the game, and then I pop right back out. You know, because players want to talk to their teammates. They want to, you know, they want to get their treatment, you know, and they don't want me or 15 other people hovering around them, you know, like because if you think about, like the locker room opens 15 minutes after the game, and you're right, Rafa, guys are – going in and coming out of the shower, you know, and I know if I'm coming out of the shower, I don't want people watching me put my lotion on.
Dress.
you know, getting dressed. I want a little space, you know, and so I think the guys have gotten so accustomed to what this is now that I'm not sure what it's going to look like when we come out of the pandemic, you know, because I think the Zoom environment works because it allows more media to cover the game, you know, so where you may have, you know, a non-finals team, you know, you may have 10 to 15 people in your locker room. Well, if you're on Zoom now, not only do you have those 10 to 15 people, but you may have picked up another 10 or 12 of persons that may not have been able to come and travel to Cleveland, or an international outlet that can chime into these Zooms, and they get to cover the game as if they were there. So I think there's some benefits on both sides of it, of having media in the locker room and not having media in the locker room. And I think, you know, we'll be able to come to a point where we can have a happy median to where it works on both sides. But I do think you get a more engaging player now, knowing that they can take their time getting dressed, they can walk to the podium, i.e. Zoom, and they sit down and boom, and you can talk to them right then. I think it's different, because I think a lot of times guys put up a shield, a personal shield around themselves when people have stood there for like 10 to 15 minutes watching them get dressed. And then they say, okay, I have a question for you. You know, sometimes the question is, oh, where'd you get those shoes? Oh, that's a nice necklace. Where'd you get that necklace? It has nothing to do with the game, but because they've been sitting there staring at you for like 10 to 15 minutes, sometimes they forget the question they want to ask and they're focusing on what they see in your locker. you know, as you guys know, like if you remember LeBron's locker, you would never see real personal stuff outside of a hat because he'd cover it up. So you couldn't see what he had in his locker unless he put it on himself. You know, so
intrusive. I mean, it's not far off. I'll tell you what, it may not be quite there, but it's close, because you just feel bad. Imagine somebody standing around your work environment before you get to work, or you're half naked. I mean, it ain't easy.
Imagine watching Jay Mike get ready for a broadcast when he's having to put on his foundation.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't like that.
Yeah. It takes pounds and pounds of that foundation. Yes, make this face ready for television. So it's not pretty. You're right.
Trust me, I have to see that once a week, and it's not fun.
Hey BJ, we want to talk a little All-Star. Can you stick around to the next break?
Hit me. I love All-Star.
Okay, be right back on segment 3 with our special guest BJ Evan. Talk a little All-Star break before we get out of here. Right back.
Wine and Gold Radio.
Hi, this is Larry Nance Jr. and you're listening to Wine and Gold Radio, Cleveland, Ohio, America.
There's more of this.
Whoa.
After this, on Wine and Gold Radio.
Designed from the land, for the land, the Team Shop has introduced a new in-house apparel line called the Land Collective. The first series is inspired by the 2020 NBA Draft. Each series will focus on a specific theme and feature exclusive pieces that will only be available while supplies last. Get these new looks from the Team Shop today only at Cavs.com/shop. For more style inspiration and to be the first to know about upcoming collections, follow at Land Collective on Instagram.
This is an interesting story. As a descendant of Nigerian kings, and his first name, Al Farouk, means the chief has arrived.
Okay.
That's a pretty cool ancestral story, I think.
Yeah, I'm
is
sure.
that a word, ancestral?
Yeah, you can make them up on this show, because
I know you do all the time.
All the time, man. I've invented a whole new Webster dictionary. In fact, we call it the Chonster dictionary.
Now back to Wine and Gold Radio.
That was delicious.
Okay, guys, back with the final segment of Wine and Gold Radio. We're here with Director of Basketball Operations, BJ Evans,
and HBCU graduate.
And HBCU graduate. BJ, I'm sorry you're missing All-Star Weekend in Atlanta, but next year it's going to be in Cleveland. You know what? The NBA doesn't know how to party in Atlanta. That's not going to be any fun anyhow, man. Next year, we got the All-Star Weekend right here in Cleveland. What do you think? I mean, again, you're going to be swamped. You're going to be right in the thick of it, which you normally are anyway. But what do you think that's going to be like next year?
I think it's going to be amazing, Joe, to be honest with you. You know, it's so ironic because the 50th season anniversary of the NBA was here in Cleveland, and I watched it on TV. you know, you remember those big bomber jackets that they gave the top 50 players? I'm like, man, I want one of those jackets, you know, so bad. But now to be here for the 75th anniversary, I think it's going to be special, man. And you think about all the renovations we've done to the field house, I think fans are going to come and have a different perspective of what Cleveland, you know, has to offer. I mean, obviously, I've had a different perspective since being here, you know, because as a visitor, you go to the Ritz, and then you come to the arena, and then you leave, so you don't know anything about downtown Cleveland. You know, and even the people that came here for those 4 years of finals runs, you know, the schedule was so compact, even those people coming in didn't really enjoy the city. You know, but All-Star gives people a chance to enjoy the city, and I'm sure the NBA is going to engage all the different pockets in the city to where you can be like, oh man, Cleveland's different than I thought. You know, and so that's what I'm most looking forward to, is people being able to see the city for what it really has, you know, downtown, as opposed to, you know, the mistake by the lake.
I hear even Joaquin Noah is coming now that he's going to be retired. He's going to be coming to the All-Star game to enjoy the city of Cleveland.
There was no turning that guy. He was going to hate the city regardless.
Yeah. How many have you been to? Because again, the weather, you got to count on the weather, and I'm sure you've been to some cold ones. I have too. But how many overall have you been to? I know Rafa's been to a ton. I've been to a ton.
It's not going to the All-Star this year breaks a 16-year straight consecutive stretch of All-Stars.
Wow.
You know what?
This also means more international reporters coming to town. So I'm looking forward to that specifically.
Hey, well, you know what? The good thing about All-Star Media, J. Mike, regardless of, you know, if there's a pandemic going on, there's no locker room access for All-Star because there's so many media.
That's
so
right.
Everything is mixed zone.
Oh,
so
you
go into a big banquet hall area for media. So while that would have been fun, to kick out some media, and they won't have that opportunity.
I remember international media, one thing they were famous for, they used to give away swag. I don't know if they even do that anymore. They used to give away track jackets and
Geez,
I mean, they used to really give away great All-Star swag, and I just remember – you could always tell the international journalists because whatever swag they got on Thursday, they wore all weekend.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You could always spot them. They were always wearing – they were all geared up.
You guys remember that pinstripe jacket they gave away? I think it was in the Vegas All-Star game. It was like a black jacket with white pinstripes. I still have that.
Orlando. Yeah.
That was my last All-Star.
I have that too. That was a good –
yes, that was my last All-Star game. I had one All-Star when I went to Vegas.
Oh.
That was just an experience that I do not want to relive again. because for some reason, when we go there, we're working.
We overrun.
We're working the event, and everybody else around you is partying and enjoying themselves. Hey, we're at the party here. We're going to be here. We're going to live. Meanwhile, you got to do, in your case, even more, BJ, but I have to do – my job was always to promote all the events around the All-Star game, you know, like the NBA experience and this and all the. And I always kind of disliked the fact that everybody else that came with me to the game, the same thing with the Super Bowl, everybody was partying and I was working until the whole thing was over. So Vegas was it for me. I had it.
You know, it's funny too. You're right. People say, oh man, you're going to All-Star, you're going to have this great time. And I'm thinking, okay, just say you have a player participating in All-Star Saturday night. So it starts at 8 p.m. Eastern. And so if you have a player in any of those events, the earliest you're getting out of that facility is like midnight, 1 o'clock. A lot of these parties start at 10. And so by the time you get there, you're like, do I really want to go or do I want to get some sleep? Because we got to do this all over again tomorrow. You know, so, yeah, you get very little – party time, you know, working in All-Star game, you know, very little party time.
What was your favorite city?
Ooh, I'd say favorite All-Star city is probably, that's a tough one, Joe. I'd probably say LA.
I've never done LA because, and I have to wonder because it's so spread out. I mean, it has to be fun, but it's pretty spread out. New Orleans,
Mexico.
everything is right there. I mean, New Orleans, you could walk to everything. It's right there.
Yeah, but you know, the thing about L.A., though, so you got Staples right there. You got L.A. Live across the street, and the convention center is right there. So everything that you have to do from an operation standpoint is right there in that circle. So for me, that makes it like the best all-star city. Like, yeah, everything else happens on the peripheral. You know, people are out at, you know, out in Beverly Hills and all these different places where I ain't had to worry about that. You know, that was going to be a car ride anyway, but, you know, LA Live, Staples, the hotels are right there, the convention center. That's perfect. And like, that's why Cleveland is going to be so great, because everything is like right downtown. Like, depending on the weather, you can walk around.
You mentioned the streak, and I'm sure you're enjoying decompressing at home, enjoying the family for a few days straight, like I'm sure you haven't been able to do during the season. But it is also a very important game for the HBCU family, because everything is going to be around what the historically black colleges and universities during the All-Star game. Are you pleased with what's happening? I know Chris Paul started in the bubble wearing sneakers, representing an HBCU school. But, you know, you being an alum and being involved with that community, are you pleased with what's going on during the All-Star game weekend?
Yeah, I'm very touched by it, actually, because, you know, you think about bringing awareness to certain things. Well, historically, black colleges and universities, while there are prideful alums, there are prideful people around those schools, you never really get the national recognition of the importance of our schools and some of the people that have come through our schools, like some of the athletes. Like if you told somebody that Jerry Rice played at Mississippi Valley State, the first thing they say is like, where is that? You know, but he's a Hall of Famer, one of the all-time greatest receivers in NFL history. He's a HBCU guy.
Yeah.
You know, Walter Payton. You know, I mean, I can just name Hall of Famer after Hall of Famer in the NFL. You know, we haven't had that huge spike in basketball, but just the names and the history, you know, and you bring all of that together, and now it's going to become like a national, you know, opportunity, a national event. You know, I think people will start to realize the impact that not only our schools have had, but some of the people that have walked those grounds and made an impact in the world. Like one of the things I'm most prideful of my school is like the Woolworth sit-ins that happened in North Carolina. Those were four North Carolina A&T graduates.
Yeah.
that was a part of that movement. And so for me to go to school there and walk on the same grounds of the campus and be a part of that legacy makes that special for me. And so now things like that can be, you know, come to forefront of, you know, things you don't really know about or never really heard about. And so like for Chris Paul to wear a different sneaker, represent the HBCU down in the bubble, I thought that was great.
Yeah.
You know, I will hold one bad thing against Chris Paul, and this is a little tongue in cheek. You know, he's from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, but he chose to go to Wake Forest, even though his family went to Winston-Salem State. And so he skipped over at HBCU to go to Wake Forest, but he's coming back now to finish his degree at HBCU. So I'm mad at him on one hand, but I'm happy for him on the other hand.
Now, I got to tell you a story. I used to date a Jewish girl in college, and that's how I learned about HBCUs at Boston University, because, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., who went to an HBCU school, also went to grad school. But also, she used to tell me how her family, I think it was her grandfather, who was escaping the Nazi war in Germany. A lot of the Jewish scholars came to teach at HBCU school because those were the only ones that were hiring them at the time when they were escaping persecution in Germany. So that's how I learned about HBCU school. But does Howard University get a one up on everybody now that Kamala Harris is at the White House?
Howard is one of the most prestigious HBCUs in the country. I will say that. They produce the first female, you know, vice president. You know, they get all the props for that. but where Howard ranks pantheon of other HBCUs in the country, they're kind of in the middle.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you is, because when you think of North Carolina, everybody thinks of, you know, Chapel Hill and Duke, you know, UNC and Chapel Hill and Duke. But also, you know, UNC A&T and UNC Central, you know, is it a bigger rivalry, or is it something that people don't know about? But I'm sure it's very heated and unfriendly.
Yeah, the North Carolina A&T and North Carolina Central rivalry dates back to like 1919. Like our two schools are brother and sister, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, you know, Cowboys, the Washington football team, like any major rivalry that you can think of, A&T and North Carolina Central fall into that category. And like, we have a coworker, you know, at the Cavs, Kevin Clayton, who's a North Carolina Central grad. And so one of the things I can always hold over him is that North Carolina Central wouldn't exist without North Carolina A&T, because North Carolina Central was a peel-off school from North Carolina A&T. So that school wouldn't even exist. But to tell you, it's not just A&T and Central in the state of North Carolina. There are 14 HBCUs in the state of North Carolina.
Wow.
That's 14. So it's the largest number of HBCUs in the country as far as states are concerned. But we are the two largest, and then North Carolina A&T is the largest HBCU in the country. So I just have to throw that in there. We are the largest, but Central is the second largest in the state of North Carolina.
And I think it would be a good time for everybody, all the basketball fans, I mean, if you're not, to look into the story of the historically black colleges and universities, how they were created, what the purpose was, and what they're doing right now with education in the U.S. And I think you'd be, anybody that reads on that would be really impressed of the history and what they're doing right now.
Yep, absolutely. It's really amazing. And, you know, to open up your scope of how many schools there really are, you know, there's 117 historically black colleges and universities in the United States, 117. That's a lot of schools. And the footprint is, you know, a lot of southern states, some in the eastern part, and it kind of cuts off, you know, at like the Texas line. Like, there's no schools, you know, past the state of Texas, and there's very few schools in like northeast area, like, you know, Ohio, you know, Michigan, you know, Wisconsin, like those areas. Like, you don't have them in those areas, but there's a lot of history. There's a lot of people who attended these schools that you would have no idea that attended, you know, an HBCU. And it's people that, you know, you just throw their name out there and you'd be like, oh my God, you know, I had no idea. You know, and I still find that to today. I'll see an actor or a performer on TV and I'm like, I didn't know they went to X. I had no idea. So it's great, man. I'm touched by the NBA and what they're doing. I'm touched.
And I got a second what Rafa said, and that it's raised awareness, and it made me do a lot of reading on it too. And I think a lot of people are going to do that. I think a lot of people are going to find out, you know, again, so many incredible people that went, you know, that graduated from HBCUs.
Yep. You know what? And I give you one more splash, and this is the A&T coming out of me, but you remember the space shuttle that went up that exploded?
You know, Challenger. Challenger.
So there was an A&T grad on that shuttle.
Oh wow!
And we renamed our engineering department, you know, the Ronald E. McNair Engineering Department, because he was instrumental in bringing in all the technology and the vehicles that would go up on the space shuttle. So our school has a grant from NASA that we work off of every year. And so all of the vehicles and the technology and all the instruments that go up in space now are made on our campus with our engineers and our program as a result of what Ronald McNair was able to do with that project with the space shuttles. And so that's a bit of information, you know, that people
that's awesome stuff
probably have
that's
no great. Idea that those engineering processes and things happen at a HBCU campus at North Carolina A&T State University.
Hey, during World War II, the Tuskegee Airmen trained at an HBCU school as well. So they have helped on all kinds of facets of life. So I think that's what the amazing part. And I invite everybody to read on it, because you learn something that will trigger something on you, because it is, there's a lot of history in these schools, and in not only in education, but also in everything that has to do with our country. So I invite everybody to read up a little bit on the HBCUs.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, hey, guys, BJ, do you got a minute for some all-star predictions, as long as we're talking?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to get that.
I'm going against the grain, too.
Okay, before we let you go, I'm going to get it from everybody. Rising Stars Challenge.
Well, if they play the game, I would probably take like an R.J. Barrett or something. That game's not going to be played.
Right, that's true. So, I tell you what, LaMelo is really – he's been really something, man. He's been impressive.
I am going to keep myself from voting on this one, because our guys got ignored. Isaac Okoro and Darius Garland should have been there. And I'm, so I refrain from voting on this category as an informal protest.
You know, it's funny. I usually enjoy the game too, but I'm almost happy they're not playing, so I don't have to sit through it and seethe that no Cavaliers were named to the game either. If there was ever a year that I appreciate no Rising Stars games, this is probably it.
And you know what? You're right, because there's some guys in the game, and I won't say their names, but they average less than 5 points a game. So you're right. It wouldn't be worth watching.
Yeah. What do you like in the skills challenge? What do you guys like in the skills challenge?
What are my choices?
Well, I mean, again, okay, I'm gonna go with Chris Paul, but in the skills challenge, it is Robert Covington, Luka Doncic, Chris Paul, Julius Randle, Domantas Sabonis, and Nikola Vucevic.
I like Doncic.
Yeah,
I like Doncic. I also like. But do you guys remember a couple of years ago, Nick Jokic was in that? They asked him after the competition. They said, "What was the hardest part of all of that for you?" He says, running. So other than the running part, everything else was easy.
Oh my goodness. I'm gonna take Robert Covington, just because he's an HBCU grad from Tennessee State. So I'm gonna give him the sentimental vote that, you know, he's gonna have all of this emotion and fandom behind him, so I'm taking Robert.
Luca, because at the end of that skill challenge, you have to hit either a long three or something in desperation. And I think Luca does that normally, so I'm going with the Slovenian.
That's a good pick.
Okay, 3-point contest: Devin Booker, Jaylen Brown, Steph Curry, Zach LaVine, Donovan Mitchell, or Jason Tatum. Who do you like?
I think
I got Booker.
Yeah, I think Booker is the only one that could probably beat Curry on a good day. I think. I mean, Curry gotta be the fan favorite to win that. But I like Booker. I mean, he's a rapid fire dude. And I do the other guys. Yeah, they shoot the three during game. But I think it's different when you have the rack with you. I would love for somebody to do, like, do you guys see that video on social media that this guy was trying to do the 3-point shooting contest and miss all the shots? Somebody in his backyard. He missed all the shots. That would be great to see. But no, I go with Devin Booker.
BJ.
I'd say Booker, but it's hard for me to pick against Steph. You know, he's a hometown guy for me. You know, and I've watched him shoot the basketball since he was 10 years old. So it's hard for me to pick against him. But I think Booker, I think that competition is tailor-made for him. Like, he doesn't, you know, shoot with a lot of lift, you know, and he's, you know, he's got that quick trigger. I think he can get warm and win that thing.
I would say Steph Curry, but I'm also going to kind of give a little to Donovan Mitchell, because he's got to be a little cheesed about getting drafted at the second last yesterday.
I love that, by the way. That cracked me up. the guys that are left at the end. I mean, it's supposed to be fun and everything else, but you do know that. I mean, you can't not be like, come on, if you're one of the last one or two guys left.
Yeah. Best record in the NBA, too. I mean,
that's tough, man.
Dwayne Wade, I thought, brought up a good point when he talked about the slam dunk contest, that too many tens are given away, and it kind of, I don't know, it kind of taints the outcome a little bit. So this year it could be a kind of a quick one. Anthony Simons, Cassius Stanley, and Obi Toppin in the slam dunk contest. Who do you like?
I got Stanley.
I wish fans could see BJ's face right now.
I don't know, Joe. like two of the guys I'm going to have to Google after this. So I'm just going to say Toppin just because he played at Dayton. So I'm going to give him an Ohio vote and pick Obi Toppin.
And he's like, is he the most athletic one out of the three? No?
No, Cassius Stanley can really get up. I mean, he can fly. He's wiry, but he can, he's different than Toppin. Toppin, he's a better athlete than Toppin, though.
Maybe Stanley because he's a Duke guy, but, you know, I like Obi Toppin. He's a, I like what he sees in him, but I wish I could have seen Zion in it. And someday the league will get the real dunkers in the league and have them do something. Like, maybe for next year, we should push the league to make it the 75th anniversary of Slam Dunk Championship, make it a big one, and have Larry Nass not get robbed again. I think that would be great for him to win at home.
Right. Exactly.
You have to remember, though, too, it's not necessarily the league. I mean, the players have to want to do it, too.
I'm sure.
Are you kidding me? I mean, the league would love to have Zion.
How about next year we have a father and son slam dunk championship? For sure the Nance will win that.
that's got to happen. I mean, something like that, seriously, something like that has to happen. That would be fantastic.
Yes. Hey,
well, I'll tell you what, next year is the perfect year for it, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Can you imagine having LeBron participate, Zion, Larry Nance Jr., and whoever else you want to pick? And that would be the highest rated dunk contest in the history of the NBA.
LeBron and son versus Larry and dad.
Yeah.
Generational dunkers.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Somebody call Adam Silver right now.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, we want to thank BJ Evans, our special guest on Wine and Gold Radio Episode 9. BJ, thank you so much for joining us, man. This has really been kind of fun, man. It's been great.
Yeah, it's really fun because I miss you guys, like, on the road. So, you know, just to sit here and be able just to talk shop and, like, laugh and giggle, you know, it's been great, man.
I have a request. Can you go through your thank yous since BJ knows most of them? I want to see his reaction I think you should close the show so BJ can actually see what you do to close the show. Georgie.
Okay, I mean, hey, if BJ's got a spare minute, then he can stick around for me to thank Matt Gold, the Golden Boy. He knows the Golden Boy. Everybody knows the Golden Boy. He does. He acts like he doesn't, but he does. Joe Fritchin. He knows how hard Joe Fritchin works. Damn straight. Peter Borman, who I don't even know, but Rafa said his ass off. Casey Koulis. If there was an all-star game for guys with cool names, Casey Koulis would be a starter. He doesn't know him either? Come on. Robert Hageman, do you know him?
Yes.
There we go. Gotta thank him. And I know you know the hardest working man in show business, D-Mac.
I know D-Mac.
And by the way, BJ, we still don't know what D-Mac does for the show, but he always gets thanked at the end of the show. Like, we have no idea.
Of course, we have to thank our special guest, BJ Evans, and the dynamic duo of Dirty Kurt and Big Daddy, Marty Allen. You know him.
I know that.
See you next week for episode 10. And as always, good night, Freddie Mac, wherever you are.
I can't take it anymore.
You're listening to Wine and Gold Radio.
Hey, knocked it down.
Cleveland, Ohio.
25-footer, single. Bobby hit it.
America.
It's America.